Welcome to Business Infrastructure, the podcast about curing back office blues of fast-growing businesses. If you're a business owner or operator looking for practical tips and solutions to scaling your business in a sustainable manner, you're in the right place. Now here's your hostess, Alicia Butler-Pierre.
Hello and welcome to the Business Infrastructure Curing Back Office Blues Show. I'm your hostess, Alicia Butler-Pierre, and I'm joined today by the smart man with the really cool beard, Mr. Garrett Massey. Garrett is the founder of iSOAR, Inc., a mobile and web app development agency. His company's portfolio includes initiatives for Coca-Cola, the Home Depot, the U.S. military, and many small businesses and nonprofits. Garrett's development team has extensive experience developing specifically engineered web applications. These applications are often created to streamline processes, reduce staff requirements, and increase sales and/or audience participation for their clients. An entrepreneur for over a decade, Garrett has been recognized by the Small Business Administration as their Young Entrepreneur of the Year. He has a degree in computer science from Georgia Southern University and spends his free time cooking, hiking, and hanging out with his family. Have you ever been frustrated when you find a new piece of software, or maybe it's even an upgrade to existing software that you have, only to find that instead of increasing your productivity, it actually takes away from it? Well, today Garrett is going to share some insights with us about how we can connect our existing software with maybe new software to help maximize our productivity. Please welcome Garrett and his beard to the show. And if you go to businessinfrastructure.tv, you'll see his picture, so you'll know exactly why I keep teasing him about his beard. How are you today, Garrett?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for coming onto the show and agreeing to speak with me today and sharing this very important topic with us today. I really appreciate that. Can you first tell us a little bit more about iSOAR, Inc., your company?
Yeah, sure. So this month, actually January, we are 12 years old. I started iSOAR really in a college dorm room kind of scenario with a few classmates as my first employees. And we have grown quite a bit. We have a couple of sides to our team. We work a lot with digital marketing, website type projects, as well as more product type projects that are longer term, either mobile app, web app, or a combination of the above. So we're located here about an hour south of Atlanta, and that's pretty much us.
Okay, awesome. So speaking of your product projects, we're going to talk specifically today about how to connect software, existing software, or it could be databases or systems of some sort. And I noticed in a previous conversation that you and I had, you were talking about middleware. So for those who may be listening and aren't necessarily familiar with what that is, can you explain exactly what middleware is?
Sure, exactly. Yeah, definitely. The concept of middleware is pretty straightforward. It's really glue that adheres two pieces of software together. Oftentimes, you may have an application, either a legacy application or a large enterprise application, or even a small business. You know, you may have QuickBooks, for example. You know, the possibilities are endless. And you may have another application, whether it's time entry, whether it's ticket management, whether it's accounting, it could be anything. And just like, you know, that your team in your organization, you don't want them being siloed. It's not helpful for your software applications to be siloed from each other. When they are, oftentimes there is manual data entry. There's stuff like you're having to download a file and then walk over to another computer and load it in, or you have somebody whose sole job is to kind of be that middle person between two applications. Middleware is in this particular case, is really just a software that connects multiple pieces of software together.
So is it something that's always customized, a customized solution, or is it possible to buy some type of an off-the-shelf solution to serve as that bridge between two or more systems?
Sure, they're actually both are quite viable depending on the particular situation. There are systems such as FARAPP, FARAPP, and what they do is they create customizable connectors for different applications. So, for example, NetSuite connecting to 3DCart, Amazon connecting to Shopify, stuff like that. They have systems in place where it's subscription-based model, and that type of solution is kind of out of the box with a level of customization there. Oftentimes, if you're working with legacy software, you're working with something that was custom developed already. You don't have that luxury of using something out of the box, so a custom solution can often be the only way to go as well.
Okay. And when you say legacy systems, for those who may not be familiar with that term, can you explain what you mean by that?
Certainly, certainly. All I mean there is older applications, applications that may or may not be supported anymore. We've had clients using AS400s. We have a client that we're working with right now that has about a 15, 16-year-old Microsoft Access application. You know, old, right? Scary
Wow.
stuff.
Wow.
So older systems like that, I think whomever coined the phrase legacy systems was really just trying to say old stuff really nicely. So, yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because this is a great segue, I think, into something else that I want to ask you. And that is, when it comes to upgrading or investing in new software technology, whether it be a web-based application, actual software, which is kind of starting to be a thing of the past, right? And then, you know, we have mobile apps. There's this thing that I call this affliction, and I call it the shiny object syndrome. And a lot of times, Garrett, we see something, we may see a commercial, some type of an advertisement, a billboard, and we're like, oh, yes, I want that, the latest blank.
Yep.
And we get really enticed by what's being advertised, but we don't always necessarily take the time to read through the specifications. And so what happens is we may invest in that, only to find that it doesn't communicate or sync nicely with these other systems that we may already have. And I see this all the time, and I'm sure you do too. And it's not just with us as individuals, but it's in small businesses and large corporations alike. We rush out there to go and invest in something without really taking the time to think about, how is this going to integrate, or will it integrate and communicate with my existing systems? Mm-hmm. So if we had to think of this as a process, Garrett, for selecting and knowing, or actually for knowing when it's time to upgrade or just invest in new technology altogether, how would you describe that process in determining when to invest in new technology and how? Is it a matter of really studying those specifications and looking at all of your existing systems? I know that sounds like a lot of work, but I'm curious to hear what you think that process in a general sense should be.
Sure, sure. You know, the symptoms, and actually to your previous point about shiny object syndrome, that's one of our partners and I were talking 2 days ago about how easy it is, especially with internet-based technology, to sign up for a new platform. You know, it's just a matter of punching in a credit card number and poof, you've committed your team, yourself, your organization, whatever, to this new thing. Where, you know, back in the day, not that long ago, sales cycles for software applications were much longer. Now I can hop online, right, and start a free trial and punch in a credit card number and get auto renewed in 30 days, you know, while we're on the phone here together. You know, so just the intensity of the shiny object syndrome is, I think, is really, really important to be aware of. I'm guilty of it. I think we all are. You know, the symptoms that play into when it's time to look at upgrading, when it's time to change, to look at changing. You know, I think there are a million of them. We're working with a client right now. Their symptom was they have an old application that's been running for pushing 20 years. It runs on about a dozen computers in their office, and their computers are dropping here and there. So now they're down to 10. Now they're down to 9. The application is no longer maintainable. So it was a very time-sensitive issue that they have. For other folks, it's really taking a step back and looking at what are my time-consuming processes? What type of processes do I have that are costing me money because of inaccurate data entry? Or I have half a dozen people doing a manual task that they're doing the same thing every time. You know, this really should be automated. So, you know, the symptoms, I think, can be very varied in how they rear their heads. Some major sense of urgency, some you can just kind of push to the back and hope they go away, but ultimately they never do. And as far as, you know, determining whether to upgrade or whether to replace, whether to go the custom route or the out-of-the-box route, you know, that really, really depends on the particular situation, on the particular type of software. We recommend reviewing specifications, sitting through webinars, that sort of thing. That gives you a good sense of all the positive features for a particular solution. The thing that it doesn't necessarily give you is the kind of the downside to whatever that particular application is, because anything out of the box, you know, it may get you 99% of the way to there, but there's that 1% or that 5% or that 10% that's not quite exactly what you need. And that's where these, you know, middleware solutions can come into play, custom development can come into play. Working with a consultant that has experience in particular areas of your business, I'm a huge proponent of. We, you know, here at ISOR, we work with consultants on, you know, all sorts of different things. You know, so partnering with someone that really has a clear understanding, or at least knows what questions to ask. Technology, for some people, is like automobile mechanics to me. I don't trust mechanics. I don't understand mechanics. That is just not my thing. So I rely heavily on folks that I trust when it comes to fixing a car, you know, buying a car for that matter. So having the right partners in place, the right relationships in place, I believe is really important as well.
That's a great point. And I'd like to get your feedback on this as I listen to you and I'm kind of thinking through, okay, what would that, again, process, that selection process look like? As you're starting to think about what your time-consuming processes are and whether or not those processes can be automated, I would like to also offer that might be a really good time to actually map out the flow of how information is currently flowing versus how it should flow. And I'm just thinking that would also give you a very good indication of what to look for in a new or upgraded solution. What do you think about that, Garrett?
Absolutely, absolutely. Knowing, particularly as an entrepreneur, you know, we've done here at ISOR the same things in some ways for 12 years. Or we have legacy processes, stuff that we've done the same way for a really long time. And oftentimes, you know, processes that made sense 12 years ago or processes that made sense 6 months ago no longer make sense. You know, whether it's change in the type of offerings that you bring to the table, whether it's staff changes, you know, even, you know, physical office changes. You know, I think it's important to constantly evaluate those processes. And as a small business owner, as a manager of a team, as a CEO, you know, whatever your role is, it's hard oftentimes to step back and look at stuff, because if as long as it's running well enough to not be a fire, then you tend to focus on things that are fires. But there's so much opportunity in most, I would venture to say, all organizations to streamline some process or many processes, as the case may be. We have a client that we're working with right now that has a turn-in process. They work with a 2,000 contractors, some crazy number of contractors, and there's a turn-in process where the contractor submits the files that they created for our client, as well as order information for the end client. So the folks that hired the firm to perform their service, the contractor is responsible for entering in that order information. This is about a $200 million company. They were able to realize that because of order inaccuracy on the contractor's part, they're bleeding anywhere from $250,000 to about $500,000 a month.
Oh my gosh, a month?
A month. Crazy.
Wow.
Crazy numbers. And it took a step back. And you know, they use NetSuite, huge system. They have an extremely customized version of or install of NetSuite, which is a big ERP. You know, they took a step back and they sat down and walked through the process that their contractors have to deal with, and they're like, holy smokes, we are kind of doing this to ourselves because we don't make it easy for them. Mm. You know, there's so much room for error, so much room for inaccurate order entry. And, you know, they were in a scenario where they could look back and see, this is how much money we're writing off on a monthly, on an annual basis. So, you know, I think for a lot of folks, you know, small business owners, especially, you know, your numbers may not quite be that big, but there are processes within your organization that maybe you haven't touched in a dozen years. Maybe you just kind of leave well enough alone. So yeah, absolutely, documenting processes, evaluating, formalizing processes, I mean, is really important. And oftentimes, as you start that process, I've found that you can identify processes in other areas that are ancillary that connect in some way. You know, whether it's accounting and time entry, you know, if those are, you know, two separate processes and there's no integration there, you know, there's room for error. There's room for you know, I heard a scenario yesterday from a client of ours that's in the healthcare industry. There's room for fraud. So yeah. All things to think about.
Absolutely. Now, going back to the example that you shared with your client that's losing a lot of money on a monthly basis, or was losing a lot of money on a monthly basis, is that also an example where you were able to develop some type of middleware solution to connect two or more systems that they may have had in place?
Yes, actually it is. So for that particular client, we have a three-pronged project. The first portion has already been rolled out. The second portion is in the process of being rolled out. The third portion is in development. The first portion actually was completely separate from that particular issue that I described, but there's a large cost savings to it. So they have an internal software package that they use for an internal wiki, for sharing resources among the team, for that sort of thing. And they have a single sign-on platform that they leverage for all their employees as well as the contractors. Like I mentioned, they have something like 2,000 contractors that they work with on a regular basis. They needed the contractors to have access to the resources in that wiki in their resource center. The problem was the software that they were using for that resource center charged per user on a monthly basis. So $100 a month, $100 a year, something like that per user. You multiply that times 2,000, you're looking at, you know, a pretty significant chunk of money, particularly for contractors who, you know, you may work with once a year, you may work with a few times a year. So we were able to develop a middleware solution that sits between their single sign-on application that their contractors and all their employees use to access all their systems, in this wiki application that has a subscription model. And basically, we were able to dynamically assign a contractor, a user, to the wiki system on the fly. So they don't have to have a dedicated user. When they log in, we assign them a user. They never have to see a username and password. They get automatically logged into that resource center. And so that way they don't have to have 2,000 licenses for their contractors. They can have a handful of licenses.
So they've,
you know, well into the six figures every year just on licensing fees.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was a pretty cool solution. The other portion of the application that we're working on, we've developed a system that sits on top of NetSuite, that provides a much, much, much cleaner, easier to use, mobile friendly way of turning in these orders, turning in these files. So the contractors that they work with, have, a way easier system to interact with. So, that sits on top of NetSuite. So, we can call it Topware if we want to. I don't know if that's a technical term or not, but it should be if it's not.
How long did it take to develop the application where you were able to connect to the internal wiki?
That was about a month long process.
Okay, that's not long at all.
No, it was
pretty quick.
Right at 4 weeks. The solution was pretty elegant, if I can pat my team on the back for that one. The challenge that you run into with these larger systems is, you know, there's oftentimes a lot of processes that have to be gone through.
Yes.
To get something deployed, to get something ran through IT, all sorts of fun stuff. But yeah.
That's, I'm still amazed, you know, considering the size of the company, that you were still able to complete that in just 1 month. I've been a part of a team that worked on a project for a very large company, and they had oh gosh, it was at least 26 different systems that they were trying to all pull together into one master system to produce what they call the record of truth. And to your point, it was just trying to figure out not only what data was housed in each of those systems, but trying to figure out, okay, what is the ideal flow of that data from one system to the next? And that alone took over a year just to figure that out. And, you know, as you know, the more people you have who have to provide their input, and then you, all of these people have to sign off on it, it can become very complex. And that actually leads into my next question for you. And that is, again, we're talking about small businesses, but small businesses can also have very complex processes depending on the industry that they're in. And what can a business owner realistically, Garrett, expect to invest in a customized middleware solution? And I know the answer is it depends, but can you just give us some type of an idea of, you know, cost-wise of what we would be looking at?
Sure. And that is absolutely a difficult question to answer, but I'll take a crack at it. It really does depend on a huge number of factors. The type of technology that's being leveraged, if you're using that 15-year-old Access database application or an AS400, as opposed to, you know, maybe I've got QuickBooks Online and I've got, you know, a WordPress WooCommerce site over here. The level of complexity and the effort that goes into that can vary drastically. We've had projects that we've done that were in the $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 range that solved a particular problem, and we've had projects that we've done that have been well into six figures that solved a different type of problem. The cool thing about solutions and the thing that gets me excited about developing solutions like these is the simple fact that the results can be traced back to changes in revenue. You can look and say, hey, by automating this process, the 3.5 people I had doing this on a weekly basis, I only need one person to do that now. So I've got 2.5 folks' salary to play with to do something different, to repurpose those folks, to train them in a different skill or a different area. I'm not, you know, writing off $250,000 a month in bad orders or, that sort of thing. It's really, we find that once we can kind of get folks' heads wrapped around what the solution could be, they already see the knife sticking out of their side. They know that they're bleeding. They're looking for a Band-Aid to, a patch, I suppose. Band-Aid, I guess, in a lot of sense has a negative connotation. They're looking for a solution. They're looking to get that knife out and kind of move on down the road. So definitely as you're documenting processes, evaluating, hey, best case scenario, I could repurpose, these two folks, or I could save this, or I could change this or whatever, and kind of looking at what the ROI on that sort of investment really looks like. And oftentimes it can be a no-brainer.
I just thought of something, Garrett, and it's something that drives me absolutely crazy, but I know it has to be done. And that is the upgrades. Every time you look, especially mobile apps, oh my gosh, they're constantly being upgraded. And so, what happens when you've developed a customized middleware solution and one or more of the systems that middleware is connecting has changed? Sometimes it could be a very slight change with an upgrade, But other times it can be a pretty significant change. I would think that that would mean that you would then, you and your team would then have to go back and and make adjustments to that middleware.
Sure, sure, yeah. So when we are developing that's a middleware sort of solution, our preferred way of interacting with both or more, two or more applications is leveraging their APIs. So API stands for Application Protocol Interface. Software developers will create APIs to give developers like us the ability to programmatically, so with code, interact with their application. So the alternative to that would be directly manipulating, directly pulling information from an application's database, or that would probably be the main way. What that does is it kind of puts a little bit of a shield against those sort of upgrades between our software and the application upgrade, because when a software developer creates an API, they create the documentation that goes along with it. They give us functions that we can use. We can pass data back and forth. Most of the time when software is upgraded, that API doesn't change. Or if it does change, it's backwards compatible. So if we're using version 1.0 and they release version 1.1, sure, they may have added some new features or said, hey, we're no longer using these. They'll still work for a few versions, but just heads up. So can certainly be that maintenance piece to it. But if it's done right, and if it's done, if the applications that are in play already kind of adhere to a safe programming model, I guess, the risk of something terrible happening is pretty well mitigated. It's certainly still possible, but it can certainly be mitigated in that fashion.
Unfortunately, we're coming to a close here. There's so much more that I could ask you, so we might have to do a part two to this.
Sure, absolutely.
Before we close, Garrett, are there any resources that you could recommend as for those of us who are trying to educate ourselves a little bit more about how we can connect these software tools? You did mention FAR app, but is there anything else that you can recommend or share with us?
Sure, there are an absolute ton of various resources out there, and they really do depend. The ones that are relevant really do depend on the software application or the type of application that you're working with. My kind of across the board recommendation would be to go to your current software vendors and ask them how other users of their systems have handled these particular challenges. And most software vendors are aware that other things are in play outside of their software package, and they can usually give a pretty good recommendation on what types of resources to look at. The other resource I'd recommend checking out is across the board suggestion would be industry groups on LinkedIn, anything like that. Folks that may be in a different geographic area or different market but using the same types of software, reaching out to those folks, because this is not an uncommon issue.
Okay, awesome. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can check us out at eyesoreinc.com. That's EYESOREINC.com. or you can email me at Garrett, G-A-R-R-E-T-T, at isoaring.com.
Okay, awesome. Well, Garrett, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
For your time today. I really appreciate it. I certainly learned quite a bit. And like I said, I have probably 100 more questions that I could ask you, but for the sake of keeping this conversation as efficient as possible, we're going to just go ahead and wrap up. So again, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Business infrastructure is all about linking people, processes, and tools to your goals in a profitable, scalable, and sustainable way. Garrett has shared some great information with us today about connecting software systems to maximize our company's productivity, as well as save us potentially tons of money. I'm going to quickly recap some of the things that Garrett shared with us today. Number one, middleware is the glue that adheres two or more pieces of software together. I love that definition. Very simple, straightforward, to the point, and something that I know I can definitely understand. In terms of a process for trying to figure out when and how to potentially invest in new software, Garrett recommended first, ask yourself, what are your most time-consuming processes? Then figure out, is there a way to possibly automate what you're doing? I also suggested that you try to map out the flow. That may also help you figure out areas where you can potentially automate some of your workflow. And then that will give you the information that you'll need to possibly review the specifications of a potential automated solution. And then lastly, Garrett highly recommends that you educate yourself so that you can get the right team of people, including consultants, to help you. If any of this information resonates with you, or if you want to learn more, definitely reach out to Garrett. His company is iSoar Inc. The website is isoarinc.com. His email address is garrett@isoarinc.com. Don't forget about our website, businessinfrastructure.tv. Here you'll be able to not only listen to this episode, but you can also get access to all of the information that Garrett shared with us today. It'll be available in the show notes. You can also subscribe, download, and comment on this episode. There's also a link to my book, Behind the Facade, How to Structure Company Operations for Sustainable Success, where you can learn more about business infrastructure and how to apply it to your small business. In fact, Chapter 3 contains the story of Albert Ando. He's a teenage entrepreneur who actually develops middleware for his clients. He needs to showcase organizational maturity of his company to a group of investors, and he uses business infrastructure to do that. So be sure to go pick up your copy on Amazon so that you can read all about how he's able to do that. Again, all of this information is available at businessinfrastructure.tv. Thank you so much for tuning in, and remember, stay focused, be encouraged. This entrepreneurial journey is a marathon and not a sprint. Until the next time.
Thank you for listening to Business Infrastructure, the podcast about curing back office blues with Alicia Butler-Pierre. If you like what you've heard, do us a favor and subscribe, leave a rating and review, and more importantly, share with your colleagues and team members who could benefit from the information. Join us next week for another episode of Business Infrastructure with Alicia Butler-Pierre.